When the BBC's Kim Haddis opens her reporter's notebook, there are details of hundreds of thousands of miles traveled with secretaries of state, most recently with John Kerry, for those talks on Iran's controversial nuclear program. Kim is the BBC State Department correspondent, and she's visiting Boston, so we thought, why not come in and please page through your reporter's notebook with us. Kim, welcome, and start with those talks with Iran, the first serious talks in decades. People worried it's a complete sham. Your sense of how real it is.
You know, it takes time to get over 30 years of enmity between two countries, 34 years, three decades. It simply takes a lot of time. In those two sessions, the public negotiation sessions that they had in Geneva, or the negotiations that were made public, because obviously they happened behind closed doors, you know, American officials, Secretary of State and his Iranian counterpart, the Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, spoke more in 30 hours than they had in 30 years. But you need more to get beyond those three decades of enmity. And that's why the nuclear talks are not just about Iran's nuclear program. I really feel that this is about how the relationship between the US and Iran could evolve. And this has the potential of transforming the Middle East. We don't know yet whether the Iranian leadership has decided to change its regional calculations, whether they've decided to do things differently when it comes to Syria, for example, or Hezbollah. At the moment, the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, decided that it was better for his country to find a way to undo the sanctions. And they're willing to negotiate about their nuclear program and show good faith on that front in order to save the Iranian economy. And that is a decision that he made a couple of years ago already, but it's taken some time to get to the table. Mm. But we don't know yet whether there's also a decision that's been made to go beyond that. And of course, it was only made possible, the real progress was only made possible when Iran had a public face that was more acceptable to the rest of the world, and that is Hassan Rouhani. You would not have had this deal under President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, even though we know now that some of the secret negotiations with Iran started when he was still president.
Yeah, it's interesting because you get to see that sometimes moments in history, diplomatic moments in history, are just the luck of the draw. You know, John Kerry has an opportunity because there's a new president in Iran and a switch in thinking in Iran, an opportunity that Hillary Clinton might not have had. But I just want to talk about, you bring such an interesting perspective to this. Born and raised in Lebanon, do I understand?
That's correct, yeah. Yes. I grew up in Beirut.
And as you've written elsewhere, including in the book I have right here, The Secretary, it's your times with covering Hillary Clinton, you talk a lot about how that gave you an interesting perspective. As a child, having a sense of the U.S. as this omnipotent country somewhere over there. And then you learn, well, maybe not so much. I mean, what do you bring, having been raised in Lebanon?
I think I bring a different voice to the discussion about American power. I've been on both ends. I grew up in Beirut on the receiving end of decisions made in Washington, whether I agreed with them or not. And then I became a journalist in Beirut. And then 5 years ago, I moved to the U.S. and I became the BBC's State Department correspondent. And in essence, I suddenly had a front row seat to the making of that same foreign policy. I could ask some of the questions that haunted me as a child to secretaries of state and ask them, but what about Syria? How are you doing it? Why aren't you intervening, or why should you, or why should you not? These are questions that I, as a journalist, am able to explore from an intellectual perspective, but I still understand that people back in Syria are haunted by some of those same questions.
Well, and you say you grew up in Beirut seeing the effect of U.S. policy. Remind people, such as?
Well, the Lebanese civil war lasted for 15 years, and the U.S. was involved, was drawn in at various points, particularly very painfully in the beginning of the 80s, with the assassination of an American ambassador in Beirut, actually in 77, and then the bombing of the U.S. Military barracks, the Marine barracks, in 1983. For people who were pro-West, there was always this hope that perhaps the U.S. could get involved and put an end to the war. You know, I open my book with a sentence talking about my father, who said if America wanted the war to end, it would be over tomorrow. Now, of course, things are much more complex than that. And as a journalist, as an adult, I understood that things were much more complicated, and that even for the US, it's not a question of just pushing a button and making things happen.
Well, just to finish that thread, so as a young girl in Beirut, you had this thinking about super America, but then we're both surprised and, you know, somewhat disappointed to find out that's not true. How interesting that that took you to diplomacy, because diplomacy isn't about pushing a button.
No, it's not about pushing a button. But when you are living through a war, you are hoping that it can come to an end. I still see people in Syria and in other places wonder why the US doesn't just swoop in and put an end to the conflict in Syria. Mm. And it's very difficult to explain to people all the complexities that the US has to take into consideration when it's making decisions like that. Every decision that the US makes has a domino effect on other issues that it's dealing with. We now know that the impact of a strike on Syria, for example, in September, when President Obama was deciding whether to strike or not because of the use of chemical weapons inside Syria, that could have had an impact on those secret talks with Iran. So everything is connected. But really, it's very hard to rationalize that when you're living through a conflict yourself.
Right. Your times with Hillary Clinton, again, you've written a whole book, but just give us one glimpse, something maybe we haven't seen of her as she was Secretary of State. And as we look ahead to 2016, she might be a presidential candidate.
What I found very interesting covering Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State was how much warmer she was in person than as a candidate on the campaign trail. She really seemed to grow into her role as Secretary of State. She relaxed. She was much more herself, I felt. She literally let her hair down, and figuratively. She has quite a good sense of humor. She's quite mischievous. Mm. We'll have to see whether she's able to maintain that level of comfort with herself when she's back on a national stage. She's very comfortable on the international stage. And she developed a great relationship, working relationship with President Obama. She'll have to differentiate herself from him if she decides to run, without looking like she's undermining the work that they both did in his first term.
Hmm. Is there something that you've picked up on that's a new diplomatic front that maybe we haven't heard of yet?
Asia's always interesting and not often talked about. But I do think that it's worth keeping an eye, a close eye, on the Iran-US relationship. It could have an impact on Syria. It could have an impact on Lebanon. And it could be positive. We don't know yet, but it could be positive.
That's Kim Khatas, the BBC State Department correspondent, also author of The Secretary, A Journey with Hillary Clinton from Beirut to the Heart of American Power. And the Beirut part was hers, born and raised there. Kim, thank you so much for opening not just your book, but your reporter's notebook for us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Robin. Thank you.
And by the way, if you want to follow her on Twitter, it's at BBC Kim, G-H-A-T-T-A-S. Always fascinating. You're listening to Here and Now.